Good evening, everyone. This meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education will come to order. In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through the annual public notice on January 10, 2013, faxing to three newspapers designated by the board, posting on the district website and bulletin boards, and filing with the clerk of Clinton Township. Heather, would you please do the roll call?
Mrs. Grant?
Here.
Mrs. Kresge?
Here.
Mr. Freda?
Present.
Mr. Higgins?
Here.
Mr. Malloy?
Here.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Here.
Mr. McTiernan?
Present.
Mrs. Sullivan?
Here.
And Mr. Sturgis?
Here. Mrs. Sullivan, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance? Okay, excuse me. We're going to find a place.
Stand by for technical difficulties. You can just pop it up on the screen.
Sorry, folks.
Mr. Weber. Way to go.
That'll work.
33 stars? It's an old computer.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It's better than nothing.
It's pretty good.
Thank you, folks. Sorry about that. Thank you, Jason, for Plan B. Moving on to President's comments. Tonight, the board has a mandated training session. It's harassment, intimidation, and bullying training for board members. We have with us tonight Mr. David Nash, who's representing Legal One, and he's going to conduct a training session for board members on HIV. Please welcome Mr. Nash.
Ladies and gentlemen of the board, audience members, community members, I'd like you to welcome David Nash, Esquire. He is from the, let me make sure I get this completely right, he's the Director of Legal Education at the Foundation of Educational Administration, and he's going to present the bullying update and focus on the role of the Board of Education. Let me give you a little bit of background. David just filled me in that he spent 6 years as a Board of Education member, and he started his Board of Education career at age 22. So he's had a long insight into being on the board, working with the board, and I'm sure he can give us a lot of legal advice. So please welcome David Nash.
What you didn't hear was that was just 6 years ago. So I've really, you can see what two terms on the board did to me in my community. But I do want to thank you for the opportunity to be here. I do appreciate the role that all of you play, the countless hours that you put into doing your job. It was actually a wonderful, eye-opening experience for me to have the chance to serve on a local board of education for 6 years and sort of learn from the grassroots what it's about to be involved in your community in that way. I currently work, as you heard, as the Director of Legal Education for the Foundation for Educational Administration. We're really the sister organization that works with the New Jersey Principals and Supervisors Association and does school law professional development across the state of New Jersey. The program that I happen to coordinate now is called Legal One. That is a collaborative effort involving our foundation, Rutgers University, and their law school, and the Monmouth Ocean Educational Services Commission. So over the past 4 years, we've probably trained about 10,000 educators on various aspects of school law. So thank you very much for the opportunity to be here. I can tell you, having worked with your superintendent and your administrators for a good deal of time over the past year or so, you have a wonderful team here that is very much on top of implementing this bullying law. It is a challenging, complicated law that's intended to do all the right things, and I think has had a very positive impact in the time that it's been in effect. But it is something that, given the complexity of the law, given the passions that are involved in this issue, it is something that can be misunderstood and can, even with all the best intentions, sometimes be misapplied. So in the training that we have done across the state of New Jersey, we've tried to help educators, board members, teachers, parents, all understand the full context of what's going on with the bullying law, all the good things that we can do, and make sure we don't have some of the unintended consequences from not understanding the law properly. All right. So, there we go. All right. So, you can see my technology ability. When we do a full training on this issue, we provided you with a copy of the full PowerPoint that we use when we do a full training on this law. What we like to do is spend a little bit of time asking folks about their experience, what they see as the areas where they've had the greatest success implementing this law, what they have seen as the greatest challenges and the areas that need the most focus for us moving forward. And one of the things that we hear overwhelmingly as one of the great successes in implementing this law is that we have a much greater understanding among the entire student body about how devastating bullying can be. And we have empowered kids who in the past were victims, or kids whose friends were victims in the past, to know that they can come forward and they can speak out on this issue. And one of the things that we're seeing is that that has made a tremendous difference. We do have less bullying, I think, in large part because of the focus we've put on this issue over the last 2 years. And I think that's a real benefit. We do, though, have a challenge. We have a challenge that sometimes there is a misunderstanding that typical student conflict can be called bullying, where we have kids where there is no imbalance in power, where there is no motivating factor, where a student is being singled out because of a specific characteristic, and where we might have behavior that's inappropriate and is behavior that we need to deal with, but it doesn't rise to the definition in New Jersey for bullying. So part of our challenge is helping folks to understand that and to understand that in some cases where kids are acting inappropriately, there will be consequences and we will address the behavior and we will make sure kids are protected even if it doesn't rise to the level of bullying. We as educators and folks in the education community all understand that we have to protect kids from all sorts of inappropriate behavior, bullying or not. So I think that's been one of the great challenges that we've seen is to make sure that everyone is on the same page about what we mean by bullying and that we all understand that we will have effective responses to behavior that does not rise to the level of bullying. All right. Sorry for the delay in our PowerPoint moving forward. Technical advice, perhaps? Okay, great. So as part of the update, I wanted to just make sure you're aware of some of the issues that have been happening. And there is a major decision that just came down recently that underscores how broadly New Jersey looks at the bullying issue. There was a case decided involving the Tenafly School District, has gotten a great deal of attention. For many folks, it was somewhat surprising. I was not surprised by the decision. I think it's in line with the spirit of the statute. But I wanted to just mention the case briefly. It was a case involving a fourth grade child. It was a child who unfortunately had lice, came to school. The school district found out about it, acted appropriately, did all the right things, notified parents, did not identify the child, took the appropriate steps to deal with the issue. And it's a very difficult issue to deal with. So in this particular case, once the school district acted appropriately, there was one fourth grade student in the class who did not act so appropriately. We had a fourth grade student who decided to identify the girl who had come to school with lice and very much embarrassed this particular child in front of her classmates. In this particular case, the school district found out about it, investigated, again, took all the appropriate steps, and in their opinion, determined that this was a form of bullying. The parent of the fourth grader who was found to have been the bully was not happy with that determination and challenged the school district and said, "This is not what we mean in New Jersey by bullying." Now we have a decision by our Commissioner of Education saying that the school district was correct, that singling out a child because that child had lice or because that child had this type of perceived characteristic and ostracizing that child is absolutely a form of bullying behavior. And for some, that was a surprise, that decision. Why was it a surprise? It was a surprise for some because we have traditionally looked at bullying as a student being singled out because of a characteristic that's protected under state or federal discrimination law. It could be a student's race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, disability. Those are the things that traditionally we've recognized as characteristics that are protected to make sure that kids are not being singled out. But New Jersey has gone much further than that in our law. What we've said is that a student who is singled out for any of those traditionally accepted reasons or because of any other distinguishing characteristic can be a victim of bullying. So this case, I think, underscores how broadly we do define that term. And it's important for folks to understand that we have to look at kids who are singled out for lots of reasons because of lots of distinguishing characteristics. All right. I apologize that we're not... Okay. The Evesham School District had another case involving bullying, and we had a different result in that case. This was a case involving a South Jersey school district, and it shows the limitations of what we mean by kids being singled out because of a personal characteristic. So in this particular case, we had a court that said not every conflict between two kids rises to the level of bullying. So certainly the example of the student with lice being singled out does rise to that level. But kids who have a disagreement, kids who have some sort of personality dispute, perhaps there's a dispute about belongings, or you have one student who is being singling out another child, but we can't figure out what the motivation is behind that behavior. In those cases, our courts have recognized, and our statute on bullying says, we do not have bullying behavior. And that can be a little difficult to understand, because you could have one student who is clearly acting inappropriately towards another student, perhaps causing some harm to another student, perhaps embarrassing another student. But if we don't have a distinguishing characteristic that's motivating the behavior, New Jersey law says that we can't identify this as bullying behavior. So that's a big difference in how we look at things. It still would be, in many cases, inappropriate student conduct. It still would be a violation of our code of student conduct, and we would still take appropriate action when one student is acting inappropriately towards another student. So it's not as if we're sending a message that kids can do what they want if we can't figure out their motivation. Inappropriate behavior is still inappropriate behavior. But we have to be careful that we don't over-label and call everything harassment, intimidation, and bullying if it doesn't rise to that level. I think I'm going to ask for an assist on my PowerPoint. Is it just... All right, so we should just use that. I got it. Okay. All that training in law school, and I still haven't mastered the PowerPoint presentation. All right. So I wanted to spend some time on the investigation process for dealing with bullying issues. And I'm not going through all the slides that we have here. They would all certainly be something that we would go through in a full formal training of your district staff. But the investigation process is critical for everybody to understand. New Jersey has put in place a very detailed procedure for dealing with bullying issues. The anti-bullying specialist that you've identified for each of your schools is charged under New Jersey law with being the lead investigator on every one of the cases that we have. The principal is charged with providing assistance to support the anti-bullying specialist in that process. That is not the traditional roles that we've had in dealing with the bullying law in the past. In the past, if we had students who were acting out inappropriately, traditionally the principal would be the person to do the investigation. That's the training that the principal has received. The principal or the vice principal would be the one to investigate that matter. Under the new law, we are charged with having the anti-bullying specialist be the lead investigator for every bullying issue. It's important that we recognize that where we have a bullying allegation and we have a child who says, I've been the victim of bullying, or a child who says, I saw my friend being bullied, you might think that the child is really mislabeling the behavior, that the child was not the victim of bullying. But New Jersey says that whenever we have an allegation, we need to investigate it. So we can't get into a situation where we start pre-screening allegations that come forward. Once a parent, once a child, once a staff member says, I think this may be bullying, New Jersey law says that we do need to go forward and do an investigation of that issue. That's a change from the law we had prior to the enactment of the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights. So we have to recognize there is a formal process that we go through here under the new law. And it's a process that can take some time. It's a process where if there are many witnesses, if there's a complicated issue, if there's conflicting stories, you need to gather all of your evidence and make sure that you do the best you can to get a clear picture of what the true story really is. And we know that sometimes kids don't always reveal all the information about a particular incident, and it takes some time to go through that process. When we're going through that process, it's important to understand what rights everybody has. So for kids, there is a certain due process that they have to be afforded. As a matter of fairness, the U.S. Supreme Court many years ago, in a case called Goss v. Lopez, said that kids have a right to know what they're accused of and a right to give their side of the story before we make a decision about what discipline is going to be imposed, about whether a child did something wrong or not. So that goes back many years, and it sort of lays out the foundation for what kids are entitled to receive. Certainly, our Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights also contemplates some additional rights that we're going to provide when perhaps a parent disagrees with the determination reached in a particular case. And we'll talk about that, some of the additional rights that we have to make sure we're recognizing. There are very strict timelines built into the statute for completing investigations and completing reports. We have to have an investigation into bullying completed within 10 school days of the written incident report being received. We now have to have, under New Jersey law, this additional step that you have all been involved in for the past year. The Board of Education now needs to vote to affirm, reject, or modify every decision reached on a bullying case. And that's important. In the past, that was not a traditional role that boards of education had in dealing with this issue. As part of that process, parents also have a right if they disagree with a decision that is reached. So before I address some of the issues involving potential law enforcement, let me just reiterate the process that parents have. Parents are entitled to be notified when there is an investigation into their child, that their child may have been the victim of bullying, or their child may have engaged in bullying behavior. The parents are entitled to ask for a hearing before the Board of Education. And the Board of Education is required to grant that hearing if the parents ask for it. That hearing does not have to be a cross-examination of all of the witnesses that are involved in a particular case. The key is that the board needs to make sure that the parent has an opportunity to give their side of the story to explain what they believe really happened in a particular case. So it's critical that we always provide parents with that opportunity. We have other issues that come up where sometimes these investigations do get very complicated. We have potential issues involving law enforcement where they may need to be involved. If in the middle of an investigation of a bullying issue, it sounds like a child may have been the victim of abuse or neglect, we know that there's a hard line rule in New Jersey that we must contact DIFAS. And every time we contact DIFAS, we must contact law enforcement. So that's something that sometimes when we're in the middle of an investigation, these other issues come up. The child reveals information that says the child may have been the victim of abuse or neglect. We have other issues that come up sometimes in the middle of an investigation where we learn that a child may have been involved in the use of controlled dangerous substances. Perhaps one of the things that we've seen in New Jersey is that kids who are the victim of bullying are more likely, unfortunately, to engage in those types of behaviors where they do start abusing alcohol or drugs because of the victimization that they've had. When we have those issues, we have to make sure we're addressing that and providing help. We do have issues that sometimes come up where a student engages in bullying and it gets very, very serious, and a student threatens another student and threatens serious bodily harm to another student. In those cases where we have what amounts to the level of threat that we have serious bodily injury that might be caused, we have to involve law enforcement. So sometimes in the middle of these cases, we'll find something that forces us to also involve law enforcement. And sometimes law enforcement will be notified, and they will then tell the school district, we are now investigating this issue, and you need to put a hold on interviewing certain witnesses. School district, in the vast majority of cases, if law enforcement makes that request, is going to abide by that request and is going to listen to law enforcement and hold off on interviewing certain witnesses. And sometimes that means that we're not able to finish our investigations as quickly as we would like. Even in those cases, even in the cases where law enforcement says we need you to hold off on interviewing certain witnesses, you still have a deadline. Your anti-bullying specialist still has a deadline to complete the investigation and write a report. But what we'll do in those cases is submit a report, indicate that we've been unable to complete the investigation, and that the report will need to be amended at a later date when we're able to finish the investigation and interview all the witnesses. So that can be frustrating to the parties involved, to the parents of the alleged bullying victim, when you're not able to finish the investigation as quickly as you would like. And that's part of an educational program that you really want to have for your parents so they understand that there are times where you're not going to be able to do these investigations quite as quickly as you would like. I did want to mention one issue involving the sharing of information between schools and law enforcement that many school districts are not aware of. And this is important because, again, when we have these issues that come up with harassment, intimidation, and bullying, it's possible that law enforcement might have some information about things that happened outside of school. You might have information about things happening in school, and if you were able to put your information together, you'd have a much clearer picture about what's actually happening with that child, both the alleged bully and victim. School districts are allowed to, under New Jersey law, create what's called a law enforcement unit that allows you to more freely share information between schools and law enforcement. And that unit makes sure that law enforcement has the information they need to protect kids and that it's easier for you to have the information that you need. Most school districts have not taken advantage of this option that's available in the code to create this type of a unit. But I think it can be a valuable tool. One of the things that it does is allow you to share information with law enforcement. For example, if you have videotapes on school buses, you have videotapes in various aspects of your school district, you would be permitted to share what's on those videotapes with law enforcement. And you would not have any issue about violation of student rights because it's for a law enforcement purpose to make sure we're protecting kids. It's an option that I would encourage school districts to take a look at and think about because I think ultimately it makes sure we're doing a better job of sharing information back and forth. So throughout this entire process, we've got certain steps that the board has to take to make sure you fulfill your responsibility. So let me just walk through the steps involved from the board's point of view. Step one, the board receives information from the superintendent on incidents that may have occurred in the prior month regarding bullying. That information has to be sent to the parent of the alleged bully and the victim. So the parent of the alleged bully and victim are entitled to be informed of the nature of the allegations involving a child, the conclusions that were reached by the anti-bullying specialist, whether or not discipline is being imposed in a particular case. Parent has a right to know all those things. Parent receiving that information may request a hearing before the board, and then the board, again, has to vote in every case to affirm, reject, or modify the decision reached by the superintendent. So one of the things that we've seen across the state is that many boards have not fully understood the complexities in this particular law, and I think your district is ahead of many other districts on this issue. Last year, we had over 12,000 HIB incidents, and we only had 6,900 board decisions. We should have had a decision in all 12,000 of those cases. So there were thousands of cases where boards did not vote to affirm, reject, or modify the decision that was reached in a particular case. And I think it's just because of a good faith misunderstanding of the board's role in this process. It's also critical for the board to understand the overall intent of this statute. One of the things that the legislature was trying to do was to put in place a system that promotes a positive school climate so that we're not always just trying to respond after the fact in a crisis-type situation to incidents of bullying. What's really important is to make sure that we have in place a climate and culture where kids feel safe, a climate that's conducive to learning, a climate that actually celebrates all the great things that most of your kids are doing every day in school. And that's part of the reason that the statute includes a school safety team requirement. So the school safety team is really at the heart of this law. The team is chaired by the anti-bullying specialist, has to meet on multiple occasions each year, and is charged with analyzing the data that we see in your schools. So the school safety team should be looking at the data about the incidents occurring in the individual school, the other elements of school climate that indicate whether or not kids feel that they're in a safe environment conducive to learning, and developing recommendations for how we can make the climate and the environment even stronger for the schools. This is a critical part of school districts doing the right thing, protecting kids, and making sure that you're not in a position where a parent can say that you're not being proactive in dealing with this issue. The school safety team, I think, goes to the heart of protecting kids and protecting everybody involved in this process. It's important that the school safety teams, in their role, understand the trends that are happening in each of our schools. And I know your district has done a great job of looking at this data and making sure that you are proactive on this issue. The team needs to be right in the heart of what the school district is doing. It should not be a standalone entity that doesn't work with the rest of the community. It needs to be involved in developing concrete plans for helping the district to move forward. And this is critical for making sure that you're not in a position where you're vulnerable down the road, where somebody can say you didn't do what you need to do. New Jersey does encourage these school safety teams to gather feedback from parents, from students, from staff members on an ongoing basis. That is really important for us to make sure that we have this constant communication loop and we're protecting everybody involved in the process. One thing I do want to mention, though, is that we have in New Jersey a statute dealing with student surveys, so we do have to be careful about how we do surveys of kids in New Jersey. So if we're going to have surveys that ask about potentially embarrassing situations, that ask about situations where kids may have acted inappropriately, it's critical that we have prior parent permission and that the parents have the opportunity to view those survey instruments before they're administered to kids. New Jersey enacted that law about 10 years ago to make sure that parents are fully informed when kids are being surveyed. So I give you the specific information on that survey law, the types of questions that we can't have on surveys unless we have prior parent permission. And I do that just to make sure that we're all sensitive to this, because some of the best anti-bullying programs in the country include survey instruments. And they encourage school districts to survey their kids. And it's a wonderful thing to do. We just have to do it in a way that complies with New Jersey law on this issue. So I give you all the specifics of complying with New Jersey's statute. We are, of course, in the middle of trying to make this law even better in the state of New Jersey. We had a tremendous process that we went through over the last several years to put the Anti-Bullying Bill of Rights into effect, and now the governor has formed a task force to try to examine the law and try to identify ways we can make it even stronger. The chairperson of that task force is the executive director of the New Jersey Principals and Supervisors Association, Dr. Patricia Wright. And she has been working very hard with the other members of the task force to try to find ways that we can make this law even stronger. So we do have an initial set of recommendations that came out from the task force. They were charged with coming up with some initial recommendations within 180 days. Those recommendations are out. They're good common sense provisions to try to help strengthen the law. There will be some additional recommendations coming over the next several months. One of the issues that is included in the recommendations is the ability for the principal to have some common sense discretion. We do sometimes have a parent, a child, a staff member who will report an allegation of bullying, but the minute the incident is reported and the facts are described, it is quite clear that this is student conflict, that this is not bullying, that this does not meet the definition. And part of the common sense reform that the task force has recommended is that if we have behavior that on its face does not meet the definition of bullying, we should be able to not do the full-fledged formal investigation of that. The principal should have some discretion to address those issues where it clearly doesn't rise to that level of bullying. That's a recommendation. It's only just been released, so there hasn't been any action yet on that. There are some other common sense recommendations like that built into the task force report. Of course, one of the other issues that's out there that we want to be sensitive to is the whole issue of emergency preparedness. Unfortunately, we just did a workshop recently where we talked about the data that we're seeing across the country. Some of the kids who have acted out in very violent ways across the country over the last decade or so, in fact, a large proportion of those kids were the victim of bullying themselves. So we see two things with kids who are the victims of bullying. We see a significant increase in kids who think about suicidal ideation. We see a significant increase in kids who aren't quite sure how to respond and sometimes act out in violent ways. Even though it's only a tiny fraction of our student population, whoever does this, it is an issue that we want to be sensitive to. So part of what we're doing at NJPSA and FEA is offering a whole series of free workshops, no cost to participants, to help people understand how to identify kids who might be at risk of acting out in violent ways towards themselves or others. And it's something that we encourage school districts to take advantage of. That series of free workshops, we give you the dates for when we're providing those. We just provided one on Valentine's Day. We have one coming up on March 12th at our office that talks about emergency preparedness and all the common sense steps we should take in light of Newtown and Hurricane Sandy and some of the other crisis situations that school districts have dealt with in recent years. And we have a workshop on April 11th, again, part of this free series, that talks about a systemic approach to student safety and all the things that we should be putting in place to make sure that kids are safe. So I give you information on that and the website for dealing with information that's provided by Legal One. We're also working with the New Jersey State Police and the Department of Education on a whole series of trainings to help school districts understand how to do investigations on bullying issues. So we have information available on those trainings. It's a very complicated process. You're interviewing a child, and you don't always get clear information. You want to make sure that you understand the signs to look for when perhaps kids are not being as truthful as we would like them to be, or you're getting an inconsistent story. So there are things that we can look for in body language. There are things we can look for as far as the way a student is presenting their story, the facts that they're leaving out. There's some good steps we can take to try to help get to the bottom of what's actually happening. So that's a fast overview of some of what's been happening in New Jersey. Part of what we're seeing, and I think I skipped a couple of the slides early on with my technical difficulties, are the type of cases that are being where we're having bullying. We have over 60% of the cases that were called HIB where the distinguishing characteristic was not one of the traditional characteristics. It was not race, ethnicity, gender, sexual orientation, disability. It was that category called other. And it involved this broad array of characteristics that could include height, could include weight, could include the example that I talked about with a student who came to school and unfortunately had lice and was singled out because of that. We also had, in these reports, only 20% of the cases that were called bullying, where the school district said the bullying caused substantial disruption to the school environment. Now, there's a problem with that. If we call something bullying, the statute says 100% of the time there has to be substantial disruption to the school environment, or it doesn't rise to the level of bullying. So I think in many school districts, we have had a misunderstanding on that issue about what actually constitutes bullying behavior. We must have substantial disruption. We must have a distinguishing characteristic. And we must have one other factor in place. Either the student is fearful of harm to himself or others. There has been harm to the student or the student's property. The student has been demeaned in some way, or a group the student is part of has been demeaned, or there's been a hostile educational environment. So I actually do give all of that to you in the HIB definition in the PowerPoint that you were provided. But it's critical that we not conclude that something is bullying unless every part of the definition is met. Again, it doesn't mean we don't address the issue. Many times we address these issues as inappropriate student conduct, but not bullying behavior. Question?
Can you speak a little bit more about the definition of disruption or interference?
Sure. What we have to have in order for us to call something bullying, we have to have substantial disruption with the school environment. Now, let me talk about what that means. The substantial disruption can be for only one child. The substantial disruption can be that this child is fearful when he or she goes to school and is distracted and is not able to focus on their education. So many times the substantial disruption is not obvious. You don't see a class that comes to a halt. You don't see a child who is tearful and can't work. But when you take the time to interview that child and talk to the child, it does become clear that the child is fearful of somebody else and that there is some disruption going on for that child. On the other hand, sometimes you have a dispute between two kids and they are calling each other inappropriate names, clearly something they shouldn't be doing. And 5 minutes later, they're best friends again. And 5 minutes later, they're joking around with each other, and it's as if the incident didn't happen. There's a very good chance that in that second example, we do not have substantial disruption to the school environment for the kids who have resumed their friendship 5 minutes after their dispute. So it is part of the threshold showing. You have minor disagreements all the time between two kids that do not rise to that level of substantial disruption.
Thank you. Can I ask a follow-up to that? Mr. Nash, then, and there seems to be then some sort of subjectivity as to what the time period that would actually constitute a real disruption means. So if you're the bullying officer for a school and you're responsible as the lead investigator for an HIB case, what would you recommend constitutes an appropriate time threshold?
Sure. So you have an issue where there was one student who singled out another student, and you have some evidence that the student was upset for some period of time. There is no, I wish I could give you a hard and fast rule.
Well, that's the thing. I mean,
that doesn't exist.
Yeah, I'm just looking for some guidance. It gets particularly hard the further down you get in elementary school, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I would say, though, as a precaution, is that we have to look at all the evidence. So you might have a child who is mortified that they have been the victim of bullying, and the child just wants the incident to go away. And the child says, it's not a big deal, I'm not upset, it really was not something that bothered me. That's one piece of information. You have to use your training and your judgment and look at the facts of a situation. So the child who was singled out because she came to school with lice, she might have been so mortified and embarrassed and want the situation to go away that maybe a child in that situation says, it wasn't a big deal, let's just forget about it. Your training is going to tell you that it was a big deal and that it is something that is causing substantial disruption. So that is one piece that you do want to keep in mind, that you have to take with a grain of salt the information that you're sometimes getting from your victims, because they would rather have the situation go away and they're fearful it's going to get worse. So they might not be honest in sharing with you the impact. Guidance counselors, principals, others have training that helps them understand that sometimes you have a major impact even when you don't admit it, or even don't understand it or recognize it yourself. So that is a complexity in these cases.
Thank you.
Just a question about the school safety team.
Sure.
In relationship to the board. Would it be appropriate or inappropriate for a board member to participate on that team? Would that team report out its results and recommendations to a board typically?
Yeah. Typically, the school safety team is going to be reporting out to the Board of Education. The statute doesn't prohibit board members being part of the school safety team. I think as a best practice, if you ask my opinion, it would be most effective for the board to not be involved as members of individual school safety teams, but to be able to have it take a step back and look at the work of all the school safety teams and the implications that it has for board policy, if there are budgetary issues that are raised by the school safety teams, and how can we can address those. Certainly, it would be a very good thing to get information and reports, and if you would like, from time to time, have school safety teams come to board meetings and share information. That's all very good. But I would say probably a best practice is not to directly be participants in the teams, but rather to get the information and flesh out the information from the teams.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah. In the HIB, there seems to be a variety of ways a report can come into the abuse specialist.
Yes.
In a case or cases of suspected child abuse or neglect, who holds the responsibility to notify DIFAS and notify patrol?
Sure. If you have something that looks like there is suspected child abuse, whoever the staff member is who suspects that the child is being abused, that could be a teacher, a secretary, a custodian, a principal, whoever that staff member is has a legal obligation to contact DIFAS. That person has two obligations. They must contact DIFAS, and they must inform the school principal. Sometimes what happens in the real world is you have a staff member who's never been through this process before. They're fearful about picking up the phone and calling DIFAS. So what oftentimes will happen is the person talks with the principal. Together they go to the principal's office, and together they make the phone call. And that certainly complies with the statute, as long as the staff member who suspects the issue is part of that phone call. The school district then has a legal obligation to make sure that law enforcement is contacted. I'm not exactly sure what your particular procedure is in the district. Oftentimes, the school principal will make that phone call to law enforcement that DIFAS has been contacted. So that's a common way to handle that issue. Always, though, part of the reason that you contact law enforcement is that, unfortunately, in the past, DIFAS didn't always follow through the way we wanted them to. So law enforcement is sort of a check and balance on that. At least you have a second agency that has been informed. For years, they were a little confused about that. They weren't sure why school districts were contacting them. But New Jersey has said we were going to require that in every case.
Okay. Question. In a case when HIB is appealed to the board to review, if the individuals that are involved in the case, at what point in time does a board member who may know that family or know of that family recuse themselves or choose not to recuse themselves from that investigation? Because we've all, very many people in the community, and just something I've been wondering about, if a case comes to us, at what point in time do we have to say, I can't hear this case?
Yeah, it's a great question. I was in your shoes when I was a board member, and you have people that from the community who are constantly coming to you for good reason. You are an elected member of a board of education, and they want to share their concerns with you. Sometimes they're neighbors, sometimes they're relatives. New Jersey requires us to recuse ourselves in a few very specific situations. So if you have an allegation that involves your child, obviously, you're not going to be involved. If you have an allegation that involves a direct relative, you're not going to be involved. You're going to have to recuse yourself. And that's pretty broadly defined, the direct relative standard. Beyond that, if it's a friend, if it's a neighbor, it is a complicated, difficult issue, but there is no requirement for you to recuse yourself. I have seen cases where board members just felt that they couldn't honestly and fairly address a situation involving their best friend they've known since they were 10 years old and lived next to each other. So sometimes a board member might choose to recuse himself or herself, but the requirement only involves relatives.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions?
Multiple questions.
Sure.
What are the representative rights of the student or students involved in the investigation? And how does that translate over into parent notification? Specifically, at what stage of the investigation does the parents, or do the parents have a right or responsibility to have been notified?
Good. Very important issue. The day that an alleged incident occurs, the principal should be notified of that incident. So you find out about an incident, teacher sees an alleged bullying incident in the morning, they should, as soon as possible, inform the principal about the incident. Principal has the authority to take immediate steps to protect the child and separate these kids and make sure everybody is safe while we take the time to figure out what's going on. That day, the principal or the principal's designee should be contacting the parent of the alleged bully and victim, or at least making an attempt to contact the parents of the alleged bully and victim and saying, we have this issue that's been reported. This is the process we're following. The principal, though, does have the right, and the anti-bullying specialist does have the right, to immediately speak to the alleged bully and victim and try to figure out exactly what's going on. And the child who may have been accused of bullying, their due process right at that point in time is to know what they're accused of and have a chance to give their side of the story. So we do not, the U.S. Supreme Court has said, we're not going to require that a parent be present every single time an administrator or a school official needs to talk to a child in a school setting. And that's for a very practical reason. School districts would come to a halt if we weren't able to address issues immediately that come up in a school setting. So the school administrator, the anti-bullying specialist, have the ability immediately, if they choose to talk with the alleged bully and victim. That day, before the day is over, there should be a good faith effort to contact the parents of the bullying victim. Okay. Other questions?
Question about creating a law enforcement unit.
Yes.